Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. These Saturdays we come together and have a meditation, and usually myself or another monk gives the talk. If you're not used to meditation, then it can be a bit painful, just finding a right posture. But if you develop the technology, you get yourself a good cushion and or a good chair, or no one's using a bench right now. A bench is good. So if you take that kind of effort, then at least you get a little more comfortable, because you don't want to just sit through pain. So that takes some doing, just figuring out, okay, how can I sit and keep my body still without being full of pain? So you might do it sitting. If you're older, you might do it lying down, although lying down is quite difficult because people fall asleep. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to find a posture that you can sustain, where where you can keep it still, basically. Because one of the things that happens as you meditate, you start to get fidgety. Your mind starts to think about tomorrow or whatever, or your body gets uncomfortable, or you want to look at the internet, or you want to do this or that. So there's a kind of lot of restlessness in consciousness. And when you begin meditation, you have to be very patient with the restlessness, like anything. So it's like a training. Just as you train if you're learning how to ride a bicycle, you get on that bicycle, if you don't have those little wheels on the sides, it's very hard. But if you keep training, after a while you know what balance is. You can ride the bicycle. If you're cooking rice, you burn it the first few times, or you're doing computer programming. So like anything that you do, which requires skill, it's not easy. But the rewards of skill are considerable. You know, the rewards of having instant gratification. So if I'm hot, I eat an ice cream cone. That's one kind of happiness, instant gratification. But there's other kinds of happiness which come from developing skill. So developing the capacity to play a musical instrument, the capacity to cook a good meal. You know, this takes a lot of skill, and I'm always grateful that people have that skill, because people feed us, right? But it's a lot of work, and it's knowing how to do a balanced diet. So the Buddha emphasized a lot the development of human character through the development of skill. And one of the skillful things he asked us to consider was just how we live together as human beings, how we relate to each other. And his recommendation to us was to do as much kindness as possible and to do as little harm as possible. So to not kill, to not steal, to not lie, and so on. To be faithful in relationships, to not damage the body with intoxicants and drugs and so on. So the whole idea of sila, of living a good life. And the idea of kindness comes from also not just like kindness is a kind of a sila, is like a protective measure. I don't harm other beings, I protect them. And it comes from this capacity we have as human beings to have empathy. You know, I can feel your pain. I can feel my own pain. I can see your suffering. I can see I'm suffering. And what we try to equate is that whenever I have suffering, whenever I have physical pain or emotional pain, I experience loss, someone dies, someone is unkind to me, I break my leg, whatever kind of unhappiness I experience, all beings experience that. All beings experience that. And that my intentions in this life are to not inflict those kinds of pains on other people. So let's say, for example, someone sent me an email 2 days ago. This insulting email. I don't know what this person has, some kind of problem with Theravada Buddhism, right? So I open the email, and it's like, whoa, what is this about? And so the feeling was not nice. You know, when you get an insult even through the internet, it's not very nice. So my first reaction was, of course, write up an email and send it back. But I mean, that's a disaster. But then the second, you know, the kind of you contemplate, well, anyone that gets that kind of email, kind of insulting, challenging, aggressive email out of nowhere for no reason really, feels the same thing. No one likes that. No one likes to be insulted. No one, I don't like to be insulted. You don't like to be. I'm like you. So there's this kind of empathy. Just as I don't want to feel pain, you don't want to feel pain. And we make the intention, rather than revenge, say, I'm going to get back at you, say, no, this is painful. This is confusing for society. This doesn't create harmony. I'm going to try not to do that to others. And that's metta. Metta is goodwill towards all beings. And this is quite beautiful, so that if I do get hurt on a social level, I know there are boundaries. So if there's a bully, we have to say to the bully, you can't do that. And if there's a bully at work or at school, you say, no, you can't do that. That's not right. But when things are inflicted on us from unkindness of others, we make a determination to feel that and say, this hurts, sure. It hurts everyone. And I'm going to try not to do that to others. And that's metta. Metta is the intention of goodwill. Doesn't mean I can like everyone, but I can intend not to hurt others. And this is a basis for happiness. You know, revenge is not a basis for happiness. Jealousy is not a basis for happiness. Let's say something like jealousy. Let's say that, someone else's kids are more successful, or they get the raise, I don't get the raise at work or whatever. And maybe the first impulse is jealousy. Oh, I want that. That's not fair. And I reflect, well, that's suffering. I don't want to go there. I don't want to be like that. I don't want to live like that. And so I try to bring up kindness. I try to bring up, may they enjoy their good fortune. And so we're trying to be aware of the pain in our hearts as it arises as jealousy or fear or anger, and not inflict it on ourselves or others. Not create more ourselves and others. And this is a very human kind, you know, it's a very easy thing to talk about. It's quite hard to do, because quite often we're not aware of our inner world. You know, we're quite caught up in our angers, in our fears. So where meditation comes in here, because we've tried to meditate here, meditation is a way of understanding, how to first of all, compose your mind. So often our life is just caught up in thinking. We're worried about something, and you know, how the kid's going to do, or how am I going to do in the exam, or worried about our own health, or worried about the mortgage, or we're angry at the neighbors because the neighbor's dog did it all over my lawn, and or they cut a tree down, or we get angry or fearful or greedy. There's just yet another gadget that I really want to have and I need a bigger car. And so the mind stays very, very busy, you know, with emotions and thoughts. And so the breath, maybe just make sure she makes it. I think her hearing maybe not so strong. So the breath is a way of collecting your mind. And that's one of the, when we talk about skill, one of the skills the Buddha asked us to figure out how to do is to focus. You need that in anything, whether you're gonna be an athlete or be a musician or be a computer programmer or whatever. You need somehow to compose the mind and collect the mind and calm the mind. And that's what the breath can do. The breath is always with us. It's always there. But quite often we only notice the breath if there's something extreme, like we're running really hard or we have asthma, or there's something extreme going on. Now what we're doing is we're stopping, we're learning how to sit still, and then we're trying to bring our attention to just the breathing of the body. And that, you'll probably notice, is not so easy. It's kind of difficult to do. Your mind keeps wandering off. But because you make the intention to come back to the breath, you come back to the breath, you come back to the breath, you begin to calm the mind down. Right? And that's a skill, that's a training you have to do. So, you might just ask yourself, do you have a way that you focus? Do you have a way of calming the mind? And usually people don't. You know, they just stay busy. Busy, busy, busy. So, to develop, like if you want to develop a musical instinct, you have to practice every day, you have to train every day. So if you want to develop a way of calming the mind, you need to do a regular training. So it might be yoga, it might be qigong, and in Buddhism, one of the things that's recommended is anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. But you have to do it every day. To do it once a month is ridiculous. You know, people tell me they meditate every month. I say, sure. You know, that's like learning how to ride a bicycle like once an hour for a year. And you have to do it, like anything, you have to do it. So there's a kind of intention or investment of time that you have to put into it. People say, well, I'm too busy to meditate. Well, what's busy? You know, what's important? If you can't compose the mind, I think you pay a price then. You don't have a way of composing and collecting the mind. So it's very profitable, actually, to be able to compose the mind. So then what the breath does, it does a few things. First of all, it begins to orient you towards the body. Because, as I was saying, you're caught off and we're just thinking all the time, worrying and planning, and it's only when something sudden happens that we have to stop. A dog races out and you're almost sitting with the car, but you can drive from A to B and be thinking about all kinds of other things because the mind's not trained to be centered. So one thing mindfulness of breathing does, it orients you into the body, away from thought. Now what that then, the profit or advantage there is that your emotional world affects your body. When you feel fearful, when you feel angry, when you feel upset, your body has tension in it and your breathing is affected. Because your breathing is affected, you can help moderate the extremes of emotion by being aware of your breath. So if you're getting, and we all say, you know, like if you're getting angry, count to 10. It's very common. But if you've actually trained in that, you've done that, as your emotions start to become more extreme, you'll be more aware of your body. You're in your body. You notice your body more than if you're just in thought. So let's say you're having a discussion in family or at work and you're starting to get upset about something. Rather than just being lost in that emotion, you'll have a kind of secondary awareness of your breathing because you've practiced anapanasati. Let's say one of these young people has an examination coming. You know, you've got a lot of pressure on, you've got to pass to get into university, and you get fearful. It's a fearful thing, examination. You might fail, but you have the breath. So as the emotions start to get anxious and fearful, because you've trained with the breath, you have a way of moderating fear. So the fear starts to come up, and no, go with the out-breath. Breathe with the out-breath. Do it for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and you get much better marks. You know, because you don't lose 20% because you're nervous and anxious. So it's profitable on that level. Right? But also it's kind of, what it begins to do, it begins to be a way of noticing more and more your inner world. So it's profitable on a kind of just functional level. You function, with a more awareness. Your breath helps to moderate things, focus. You can regulate emotions more. You cannot be so caught up in emotions because you're in the body. Take an emotion like anger and think angry thoughts. You just get angry. Feel the emotion of anger in the breath and be patient with it. The anger has a chance to subside. Very simple. But it takes training. If I've never trained to match emotions and breath, if I've never looked at that equation, that the emotions are affected by the breath and the breath can affect the emotions, if I've never done that work, then when my emotions come up, I won't be trained for it. I'll just get lost in them. But if I've done that work and I've contemplated breath and I've seen that, yeah, when I get upset, I don't have to just follow it with my thoughts. I can go to my body. I can go to my breath. You train in that way. Then when situations of pressure come up, you know, the sickness in the family, you know, something difficult happens at work, you've got a training which clicks in to help you ride that through in a skillful way, But deeper than that, what we need to do in Buddhism is not just have a good social life, which we try to do with dana and sila, try to live morally and live with generosity and kindness, you know, the golden rule. If something hurts me, I'm not going to hurt others. Do unto others as he would have done unto you. The golden rule is beautiful, beautiful way to live. But also we need to have a way of understanding our inner world and not just be a victim to it. And that's the capacity to reflect. Not only can I be intimidated by someone, frightened by someone, I can know, oh, this is fear. Not only can I be greedy for some gadget on the market, but I can know, oh, this is greed. We have this capacity to reflect on the moods of the mind. This is what we call jitanupassana, or the third foundation of mindfulness. Not only can I feel angry at this person and that person and this situation and the government and so on, but I can know anger as a type of mindset. So it doesn't really matter what I project my anger on, whether I'm angry at the neighbor, angry at myself, angry at the government, you know, whatever, anger is anger. Whoever I'm angry at, it doesn't really matter. And then as I take responsibility for the anger, I can see that anger takes me to suffering. It doesn't take me to happiness. And I begin to reflect on that, on the very nature of anger, and I can feel it in my breath. So I reflect on the moods of the mind rather than being a victim of the moods of the mind. You know? Let's say take a really concrete example. Let's say something happens in Sri Lanka, and there's a Tamil bombing, something really awful like that. And the war's over, and there's some kind of a bombing, and you think, oh no, you know, I would get very angry if I feel that. Now you could follow it with thought and follow all the blogs, right? And they shouldn't do this, and they shouldn't do that, and get more angry. And feed the anger into the blogosphere, right? And do internets and so on, which we do as human beings now. Or I could say, sure, this is wrong, but anger feels this way. I could take responsibility for my anger and say, I'm not going to inflict this on the universe. I'm going to be mindful of it. And if I worked it out, mindfully, and I didn't just react through it, then I could still contribute to the peace of the world, but the contribution would be truly peaceful. It wouldn't just be an angry reaction. Fear, let's say, something happens with my pension, like one of our friends, worked for Nortel, and then he got laid off. Well, he went off, he left Nortel before it totally collapsed, and then he found out that the pension plan is like half or whatever it was. And that's quite fearful for a retired person, right? And that's a very practical thing that we face as human beings, this insecurity we have. You know, what am I going to invest in, I suppose, and how is my work? So these very real situations bring up fear. So that, you know, person, all of a sudden they thought they had twice as much money as they were going to have for their pension, all of a sudden it's maybe halved or whatever. That brings up an emotional reaction. We have an emotional reaction. Now, if I just follow that emotion with thought, I'm a victim. I just think fearful thoughts all the time. And it's true. Everyone will agree with me. Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. What are you going to do? Oh my gosh, it's terrible. But I'm not aware of the mood of the mind. So it's not just a rational consideration about, okay, this is the problem. These are my options. They're difficult. I'll take option A, B, or C. It's not a rational kind of consideration. It's infected by fear, say, in this case, anxiety and fear. And then if I'm not aware of the mood of the mind, third foundation of mindfulness, jitanupassana, the jitta feels fearful, and I believe in the fear, and my mind just runs. I can't fall asleep. I worry, worry, worry. My family worries about me worrying. You know, it's kind of contagious. But if I'm practicing body awareness, awareness of the mood of the mind, my mind begins to run. I say, well, wait a minute, what's the mood behind here? What's the mood of the mind? Which doesn't mean I still have to deal with the problem. You know, that I can't. It's still a worldly problem which I need to deal with. But I can deal with both. I can deal with a worldly problem, but I also can deal with my inner world. And the way I can deal with my inner world is say, ah, fear feels this way. And that's awareness. That's awareness. So fear feels, and I feel it in the body. And if I'm careful and I do the breathing work, I can continually moderate that fear, calm it down, take rational decisions, calm it down, take rational decisions. And so the world comes at us in these unexpected ways. As much as we would like all of us to be safe and secure and happy and healthy forever, the Buddha said it's anicca. It's uncertain. You just don't know. So we do everything we can with our pension plans and our, you know, good qualifications for work and good friendships and a good bank, hopefully, which is, you know, and all that kind of business, but you still don't know. You still don't know. But what you can know is you can know your inner world and you can learn how to train the mind not to just be a victim to the negative emotions, to not just be a victim to them. You can recognize them and you can let go of the thinking and feel the breath. This takes training. This takes training. But also we have positive emotions. You know, we do have the impulse of generosity, the impulse of kindness, the impulse of compassion if someone is sick. These are beautiful impulses. And so the Buddha recommended those are the ones to cultivate. Forgiveness. Those are the ones to cultivate. So like that's what I was trying to do. This person who sent me this email, I said, at some point they're going to regret this. Because I know them pretty well. At some point they're going to say, oh no. Because that's usually happens. And I tried to go to that. I said, when you get to that point, may you be free from suffering. Because I would not have wanted to send that email. I wouldn't want the karma of that. As soon as I opened it, I thought, oh, you should not have done that. And so, you know, like, when we're just a victim to life's inputs, we just react all over the place. But a reflective mind can feel the reaction. I certainly felt a reaction because I thought it was terribly unskillful and unfair. But I can feel the reaction. Oh, this is the reaction. Life feels this way now. And then I can make a choice. Where do I want to go with this? Do I want to go to blame? Or do I want to contemplate, first of all, the feeling? And then what kind of relationship would I like with this person in my mind? Because even though the person is not here and may not be in my life in the future, whatever, they're still in my mind. Right? So they still inhabit my consciousness in some way. So do I then set up, me and them, that terrible person and me and I'm right and they're wrong, which would be the same mindset they have? Or do I think, may this person be free from suffering? May this person be free from wrong communication or whatever it is. And that kind of reflection is like still like, I mean, there's still responsibility and, you know, and boundaries and so on, but it's like, it frees you, doesn't it? It frees you from these endless kinds of inputs that we get. And it's not going to get any easier, I think. We're now in broadband. So the freedom of the inner world is one where we do contemplate these inputs that come at us, and then we start to make skillful choices. We're not just reactive, kind of Pavlovian dogs, you know, that if something comes at me, then I just have to react. But we feel it. So is this skillful or unskillful? Kusla akusla? Is it wholesome or unwholesome? Is the thinking I'm going, is that direction? Is that intention I'm making now, is it skillful or unskillful? That intention I'm making now, is that, where do I want to be in 5 years' time? Do I want to be that kind of a person? Or this other way, maybe, this more forgiving way or whatever. And that's of course human intelligence. Person who doesn't have that kind of intelligence just is very, very, very reactive. And these are very ordinary things, but they're the stuff of our life. You know, our life is not made up of some kind of abstract philosophy. You know, Buddhism has a very, very clever philosophy, and there's a lot of very clever lists and all the rest of it. But life is getting emails, right? Or dropping your milk carton on the floor, or the kids kind of, you know, having difficulty at school, or you know, whatever it is, or some kind of, and that's what life is made about. And then from these very real experiences of life, we react. We react with fear or with love. We react with compassion or whatever. And so if we reinforce like compassion, kindness, generosity, forgiveness, we just keep reinforcing that, our life has much more happiness. And if on the other hand, we're very careful with negative emotions, we're careful not to get rid of them because you can't, you're human, but to feel those reactions and to just be patient with them. I think that's the secret. Be patient with anger, be patient with fear, be patient with greed, not just to believe in them, but not to think you're bad for being angry or jealous. It's just human. It's just part of being human. But not to invest anything into them, not to feed them, not to make them a reality. Then they tend to fade away. So as you develop more and more goodness and wholesomeness, that brings a certain happiness. As you let go of the unskillful, the negative, the selfish, the egotistical, the arrogant, all of that, as you're more patient with those and not feed them, that gives a certain kind of happiness. So then that the heart has more and more kind of inner abiding of peacefulness. It's not dependent so much on the outside, more inner kind of abiding. And a lot of it you can kind of get in touch with the breathing. The Buddha really recommended knowing the body and being aware of the breath. So you have both a training in calming the mind, but also a place to understand your emotions. That's the interesting thing. Whereas thought, it just, you know, if you run with thought, quite often it runs you into a wall. It just takes you to places which can be very unskillful. So if you have a chance, I really would recommend like spending maybe a quarter of an hour before work or before breakfast, just sitting, even at the edge of the bed, just stopping, if you can make that kind of chance, and just going to the breath and calming yourself. It's very profitable, very, very profitable. And then trying to build on that. All right? I'll leave that for your reflection. Yeah.